The 20th and 21st of December 2012. More than just dates on a calendar, as this Mayan celebratory extravaganza is proving.
The following takes place between the hours of 3:02 p.m. and 4 p.m. GMT.
Exactly. Thank you, Sarah. That's where we are. That's where we're heading. This is what it's all about. Actually, did we say 3? Have we jumped an hour there? For some reason, I seem to think she might have actually sort of given us an hour ahead there.
I can confirm it's 2:02.
It is indeed 2:02.
And we are into the 22nd hour.
We are into the 22nd hour, but I'm just a wee bit concerned there that in her over-eagerness to actually work through that whole process, we actually jumped ahead. Yes, OK, let's sort it through. Sorry, Sarah, what, of course, you really meant to say was...
The following takes place between the hours of 2:02 p.m. and 3 p.m. GMT.
Yeah, you see, that's because she tea. This is the whole thing. And you could tell she was a little bit antsy there. She didn't want to be asked to repeat it. Quite understandably so. We thought we'd launched the Mayathon with that particular number. I thought, are they ever going to play it again? Yes, of course we did, because that was at the heart of this whole piece when we launched at 5 p.m. on the 20th of December in the joyous land of Lincoln for Siren 107.3 FM. Of course, it's the theme to George Powell's classic The Time Machine. And what better way to actually talk about movie composers extraordinaire than actually going to a movie composer who is generally quite extraordinary in his own marvellous, wonderful, mellifluous ways. We are talking of whom, Ed Wellman?
Luke Corradine.
Luke Corradine. Are you there, Luke?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes! Even though he was torn betwixt and between, as he said when we contacted him, he's still on the phone to the other guys. We're all in one big happy family. I've got to ask you, Luke, did they feel a little bit tired? Did they sound tired over in Los Angeles?
They did very spaced out.
They
were very spaced out.
They were very, yeah.
They're a good lot. There's a lot of energy in them.
So. Yeah. A lot of energy, but still quite spaced out. That sounds like the sort of guests we like to have regularly on this show. It's very important, and on the station as well, for that matter. So you're currently perusing the Luke Corradine details and files there, Natalie. Anything that you'd like to sort of take on board with this superlative composer, who is indeed working with Alana Rain on a number of wonderful, fascinating projects, and also, bless his heart, sent material along here. But just a little ahead of the threshold, which meant that though we'd love to feature Beneath the Planet of the Apes, the atom bomb, of course, going off. End of the world from that point of view. AI, artificial intelligence. Also, technically, the end of certain time. Although, as I always like to say, Luke, please, Blue Fairy, make me a real boy. It's just a thought. Maybe it's Pinocchio. Have you ever seen AI?
Yes, I have, because,
yes.
Fun fact...
Yeah.
The voice of the angel
is
Meryl Streep.
There you are, you see. I thought that's why I put that in for you. Please, Blue Fairy, make me a real person. It's very good. As you can tell, Elliot, we've gone a bit spaced out as well as we go into hour 22, particularly when I refer to you as Elliot, when, of course, it is Luke. So that's important, that we actually get the right name sorted through there. Elliot Morris, fine musician, but he was up just before the news, before we actually came to your good self. But when it comes to putting music and movies together, they have always gone together. Ever since the days of the first so-called silent movies, there's always been at least an organist, an orchestral manoeuvre. The balance of images and music is really essential. So my first question for you, Luke, is what is it that kind of attracted your good self to become a composer specialising in film music?
It was mainly my passion for the motion picture, for film.
Yeah.
Music and films did come into my life at separate times. It's fair to say that I was enchanted and I was drawn into music much earlier in my life than I did with films, probably as early as when I was 4 and 5, listening to Wagner and Mozart. But when I began to experience films in my 10s, 11s and 12s and the early teens, the impact was tremendous, and It was just by a matter of coincidence, because I was working with bands at the time as a young lad, that everyone was just telling me, oh, you know, you love your song, but it's songwriters, and oh, it's just worked wonderfully well in the film. And those comments just kept coming for many years until eventually I had the opportunity to just, you know, transferring all together to the film industries and kiss the record industry goodbye, and I love it here. Mm.
Oh, makes perfect sense. Ed, as a musician, as a musical teacher, the first degree in music, what are your thoughts on? I mean, we haven't actually heard as much Luke's work, but that's for coming treats and coming days. Questions for Luke?
Yeah. I think I sort of came to love film music quite late in life, really. I would almost say that when I was growing up and studying music in quite a formal way, it was kind of frowned on, actually, as poor classical music. Now, that's not something I agree with at all, but I've sort of come to know now that film music is kind of a very good way into classical music, or do you think that's a terribly patronising thing to have said?
The two things are different. Uh-huh. Classical music mostly revolves around the state concert, which means that the music has it's the protagonist on the stage and has to have level of detail that's far greater than the music that you find in film.
Mm-hmm.
Music in films, the musical film must not interfere, unless it's requested by the director, must not interfere with the picture. Therefore, the level of detail and the structure is of a lower grade, although I don't mean this in a bad way.
Yeah, I know just what you mean.
What happens is, though, and where the value is that music in film has developed its own language, its own idiom, its own lexicon of sounds and experiments that is absolutely unique, and it's much more advanced than anything that you can hear in classical music. What we know as classical music, I'm not talking about the classical period, but everything that stretches all the way to the Second World War. Does that answer your question?
It certainly does. And what about the future? I mean, presumably, it's just going to be amazing. It's going to get better and better.
Oh, really? Well, I'm glad that you think that way. It's certainly going to get more and more electronic. Because the way budgets are going, unfortunately, there's less and less for us, and also for the filmmakers, due to the effects of the digital age and blah, blah, blah. So there's going to be more of the scores are going to be perhaps more adventurous in a way, because the fact that we've given composers more freedom in a way by using just their computers and their own imaginations, and those lucky enough to be multi-instrumentalists, of course, using those instruments at hand, but the fact that everything will be now almost being created in a room as opposed to the old process which took place in the scoring stage with the orchestra, and it was much more structured, it means that perhaps the scores of the future will be more daring, more adventurous, more experimental, and perhaps the idiom will be developed further.
What's your kind of personal ambition? What would you like to achieve most?
Well, I would like to be working in films that obviously unique in a way, and they do stand their ground in true time, and then they don't go per se or dated, which is everyone's ambition. I think deep down there's an obsession by, you know, beating death and sort of having work that will resonate after you're long and gone. I hate to sound like this, but I think ultimately that's the honest answer.
That's good.
It carries with it a whole notion of romance, immortality, and a whole range of other things. Natalie is a film buff. Your thoughts on music and film? Questions for Luke?
I really like film music, actually. When you get you get to watch the film first, or do you get told about the film story before you start to compose the music? What's the process of it?
The process is normally different depending on the project. But textbook answer would be that you get to see the rashes first. The rashes are the shots, everything that's been shot in a film. A director may send you a long shot of a particular scene that's not been quite cut, or it's not in its final stages, and so you get a feel. going on. Sometimes you get the script as well, and you get to read the script. I get a lot of scripts in my way. I don't particularly like reading scripts because the best way for me of working is to react to the picture. So if I can get as final as a film I can, and just react to the images and get my guitars and my piano out and my drums or whatever is needed, and work quickly and instinctively, that's definitely my preference.
And do you get to have, like, absolute control of what you compose, or does the director sort of input and tell you what they want, or the producer, for example?
Oh, dear me, no, I don't get absolute control of what I do, unfortunately. I don't think any composer does. The music, as I said previously, it's for the film, and it needs to serve the film. And this is where, unfortunately, some of the limitations have, and maybe the idea, you know, the widespread idea that music for films is not of the same standard as classical music. It's because at the end of the day, you need to serve the film.
Yeah.
And before, you need to respond to the director. But the relationship tends to be amicable, and it's a great process.
And how's Ilana Raine to work with? Because obviously the public are desperately keen to know, is she a bit of an auteur? Does she actually say, no, I want this, this, this and this? Or do you feel that there's more collaboration with Ilana's, more openness to the whole creative process?
There's always a teamwork. I mean, this is one of the things that are absolutely unique about being a film composer. You have to be a team player, okay? Which it doesn't need to be the case when you work or you write concert music. And in Ilana's case in particular, Ilana is perhaps one of the most holistic directors that I work with, in that she needs to educate you before you work with her. So I've been getting books and films and stuff from her for a good over a year now. She's
I think Phil Leonis and Dean Haglund are finding the same, basically. You know, they didn't expect to actually have to go through graduate studies, you know, advanced courses to actually work through that. But I said, girl, you know, Ilana Raine, she don't take no prisoners, you know. So she knows what it's all about. Ah, that's why we appreciate her. Even though, you know, she has some moments where we just think, where's it going? It's splendid. It's great stuff. Luke, it's been genuinely a delight to connect with your good self. Clearly, we've got to feature some of your own music as the thing proceeds in the not-too-distant future. But we have to ask you those last two questions. First of all, have you enjoyed making your telephonic debut as far as this side of the Atlantic is concerned on Siren 107.3 FM and our midweek drive show? So can we look forward to featuring you again in the new year, where we could actually sort of have time to actually download some of your own magical music and get Ed on the case, and we could listen to some of them and have a sort of Luke Currydene classical hour or whatever, or indeed at least a 20 minutes package, etc.
It will be a pleasure to be invited again to your program, and while I'm here, let me wish you and your listeners a very happy Christmas and a happy New Year.
Exactly. Well, we pretty much know now that there probably will be one, which we didn't really realise was going to be the case back in, the December the 20th time. Award, I think, especially for Penny Evans, who as well as suggesting we should possibly have actually launched with the opening to the War of the Worlds broadcast in 1938. No, it would have frightened people. Scaring people unnecessarily. I'll leave that to Orson. Also wrote that Alex Levchuk has just said hello to me on Siren FM. Whirling Dervish, LOL. Yes, I did hear that. I was posting on the board at Chilpack Hollywood Hour site whilst listening to you, and at the same time, and advertising both shows to everyone I know here on Facebook. That is really, that's above and beyond the call of duty, you know, that particular commitment. I mean, I think Penny Evans is pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Very, very, very impressed. Luke, we salute you. Now, would you like Rondo Veneziano with La Serenissima, or would you like the John Barry 007 theme? Which one would you like to go for?
Let's go for the Rondo, shall we?
Good choice. Very tempted to play that whenever we do a feature with Marina Fiorato, but I managed to avoid it earlier this morning. So, La Serenissima, selected, of course, by Luke Currydene, ace composer. OK, onwards to more rural matters. We're now due to connect with Cass, who is the owner of the country's oldest inn, the Packet Inn, which is the Newcastle Packet Inn, to be precise, based in Scarborough. How are you, Cass?
Very well. well, thank you.
Are you all set for the festive period now that we can pretty much say that we managed
to
survive?
Well, we're just about starting. We've got a party at 3 o'clock for some builders.
There's always a challenge when you've got those party of builders in, particularly when it's at 3 o'clock. I know where you're coming from. Natalie Tuck and Ed Wellman are in the studio with us, sharing the airway, sharing the time. Why should they also gather together with their friends and make their way to the country's oldest inn, the Packet Inn in Scarborough?
Well, because we're so friendly, and it's and if they were to come in at this minute to see how festive it is, with a real coal fire and all the trimmings up and all the lights, and it's nice and warm, and everybody gets on with everybody else.
Well, I think that sums up everything. Natalie, any questions for this, your fellow Yorkshire woman?
Yeah, what's your most favourite thing about then, about, you know, running the pub?
My favourite thing?
Yeah.
I suppose it's meeting different people, obviously, because I'm on the seafront. I mean, I'm right opposite the harbour, and I'm just a few yards from the beach. So you can imagine the amount of people that come to Scarborough, and it's nice to meet them, different people, as much as I love my locals as well.
Yeah. Is it quite a nice, like, community feel then, even for the tourists that are coming there, do you...?
Well, if I can tell you, I've been here for 31 years on January the 12th, and the same people keep coming back year after year.
They can't get enough of you, Cass. Yeah, we can hear them in the background there. It's like going into the set of Emmerdale, except it's live. It's amazing. Ed, your thoughts on yourself? This sounds like a sort of suitable watering hole. If it was slightly closer to Lincoln, we'd probably be up there straight away after we've wrapped up our 25-hour show. Anyway.
Yeah, if only. I'm just looking at a picture of it, actually. And I'm thinking that you might have music on now and again. Would I be
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we have live music on every Friday and Saturday. And
yeah,
we have
fantastic
karaoke on afternoons. And in summer, we have karaoke every day for visitors come in, because that's what they're like. And we have different turns on at night. But like in winter, as I say, we always have a live band Friday and Saturday. Apart from this week, because there's a party on today, and there's a band on at 3 o'clock actually.
Okay.
And tomorrow night it's a party, and they want karaoke, so they can just please themselves.
And what's the current drink that everyone's having?
Well, either Foster's or John Smith's.
Very good.
But then it's...
Other drinks are available, obviously.
But that's just what that's what you need, isn't it? Yeah.
It's keeping it real. And
yes.
In terms of the name, because as you know, Cass, I was confused where you saw it. Hang on, it's called the Newcastle Packet Inn, and it's
right.
Based in Scarborough. Why is that? Were the Geordies confused? Did they actually just...
well, actually, when the Geordies come, they go, why is it called the Newcastle Packet?
Yeah.
Well, the reason why is it's because, apparently, all them years ago, they used to have boats were called, these particular boats that carried coal were called packets.
Good.
So hence, that they brought the coal from Newcastle to Scarborough, so they called it the Newcastle Packet.
I see where you're coming from. Very cunningly done, very nicely put together. Cass, it's been fantastic to show you the theme. We wish you all the very best for the festive season. Hopefully in 2013 we'll be able to drop by and visit you, because I know there's lots of history there, as you say. It is the country's oldest inn. Is that pretty much the case?
I don't really know about that, but it's supposed to be the oldest one.
Yeah, well, you know, that's always worthwhile, if only for the sense of history.
I have been joining the pub, the side of the pub that go back to the 12th century.
That's something the Americans just can't compete with us on, really. Unless, of course, they go Native American, in which case
we get a lot of Americans having a look in somewhere at them.
It's always the way, you know. I'm sure, you know, when Phil Leonis is next back over the side of the Atlantic, you'll be sort of saying, let's just check that one throughout. Are you still watching them in Hollywood, by the way? Are they?
I'm a bit intrigued by the photo, actually, of the Newcastle Packet.
Yeah.
Can I ask about, there's a couple of also old buildings behind, one high up on the hill, and then it looks like right behind you, you've got a church.
It was a church. It was St Thomas's Church. Now it's used by the local sea cadets.
Righty-ho. Oh, it looks like a fascinating area.
And it's absolutely an amazing building inside, what they've done with it. It's brilliant.
At Chilpack Hollywood are still going. I've got them back.
There we are. Yeah, this is what it's all about. In fact, we might try and reach our colleagues in Los Angeles because, again, we're coming up to that handover time from their point of view where we hopefully share that load for about 3 hours to give them a chance to kind of chill out, etc. Cass, a reasonably interesting telephone chat. Have you enjoyed it?
I certainly have.
And are you back with us again in the not-too-distant future?
Certainly.
Worrying about time connections and seeing how the good times roll away, as the Ruttles maintained. Well, let's just ask Dean Haglund, what time have you got in LA at present, Dean?
Well, that's fantastic. I think it's 7. My clock is showing 6:27 a.m.
Yes, and we've got 2:27 p.m., so there we are. Well, look, good news, Dean, because most statistics show that most people are likely to keel over and die between the hours of 4 a.m. and 5 a.m.
So you're right.
So you've gone through that barrier. We were a little bit worried. You know, we thought the energy levels were beginning to sink a bit, but you made it through the night.
Thank you. Yes, it wasn't an easy ordeal, I'll tell you what.
I mean, getting dressed up as Spock, was that sign of desperation, or was it a case of, well, you know, what, nothing to lose, really?
Well, you'll be interested to know that those Spock hats are actually our dust covers for our microphones when we're not using them.
I get.
So they function as two functions, and because our microphones were in use, there were two Spock outfits.
Of course. Of course, yeah. Mirror, mirror, Spock, alternate universe Spock, and of course,
right.
Genuine
so
universe
Bill
Spock.
Had the beard, so he was the evil Spock.
Ah. Well, you say evil Spock, you know, he basically, you know, he reminded us a lot of Mr. Spock in our kind of Mr. Spock area, as Leonard Nimoy once said, when he kind of stayed behind to rescue him. Never mind. It's true. Luke Corradine was very impressed with the way you guys had actually worked through that, because we kind of converged on Luke rather like a pincer movement, because we called him just as he was actually on the phone to you guys, and then we sort of related to that. So it's a wonderful classic image that was working through there. Louis Savvy sends his best. He's had a few challenges with respect to Skype and I think one or two of these sort of lines, as Louis said in his own unique way, and then the screen just went completely white. He thought there was a kind of nuclear bomb going off there, but you know, certainly the case.
It was just our own technical malfeasance.
No, malfeasance. And you see, that's a word that goes up with phenomenal and phenomenon and remunerable and remunerate as sort of the challenging words that we were hearing about. Natalie, any questions for Dean?
Dean, will you be going straight home to bed after this is ended?
Yes, Dean, will you be going straight home to bed after this is all finished?
We have exactly 6 hours of break before we go for the second half.
I know.
Which we then take till the other side of the 21st of December to make sure that the day continues into 2013, sort of thing.
Of course, so, yeah. You see, so that the world will not end.
5 hours of sleep.
Gosh.
The world will not end on their watch. From their cold, dead hands. Oh, sorry, I've got the wrong actor there, haven't I? You know.
We will stare deep into space.
Exactly. And space.
And what?
And the abyss will stare deep into yourself. It'll be quite profound. It's very good,
isn't
it?
That's right. I have seen deep space and it is me.
It's very true. And remember, in space, no one can hear ice cream. Oh, that's the, I think we're going to do a line entirely there. I'm back onto the food scenarios. So I gather we're, 29 minutes away from you guys pressing the button and then we effectively carry a feed and we'll be connecting with your good self and hopefully the magic will work. I mean, is this the case? You know, are we all set for
is
that?
This the case? Yeah, we're so looking forward to it.
Well, we'll hopefully try and keep the standard going because obviously this will be our 23rd hour that we've worked through, and after 22,
they can descend it into a myriad of obscure references of film and music and that sort of thing.
I don't think we have actually, Ed. I mean, have we descended? I mean, we had obviously a little touch about sort of filmic scores and various other things. We've just been talking to the owner of the country's oldest pub, inn in Scarborough, which is the Packet Inn, the Newcastle Packet Inn, and she seemed to be pretty much on form. Stuart Carr is coming up.
We talked to Elliot Morris, who's a fantastic guitarist.
Very good.
Yeah, it's been very eclectic this afternoon.
And actually, for yourself, Dean, I feel that John Barry's 007 theme is just waiting to go. You know, I'm itching to press that button to kind of send you into action.
We did have a 45-minute discussion about Burt Bacharach's theme song for The Blob, the 1953...
Do you know, Phil mentioned this. We weren't sure whether he was actually pulling our plonkers, to use a metaphor, which perhaps I shouldn't have used.
We got into depth of the song itself and the lyrics and the appropriateness to the movie.
Well, of course, that is very true. And if you haven't seen The Blob, are we talking the Steve McQueen version here?
Yeah, the Steve McQueen... Well, I don't... we're talking to Steve McQueen.
Yes, yeah.
I did not see the later version. I heard it was dreadful.
Exactly. So we keep to the classics. That's always important.
Yeah.
One of his early roles before, of course, he became one of the Magnificent Seven. And indeed, did that wonderful sort of escape from the Great Escape. Although I don't sure he quite got away.
Yes.
It was a great escape. It's wonderful. Yeah, that's what we need. You know, more Steve McQueens these days. I think Dean Haglund is already stepping into those shoes.
I am definitely. Yeah. I'm working very hard to be the next Steve McQueen.
How does this compare, Dean, with your running marathons? Because obviously we talked about the broadcasting marathons, and you know, you're a regular marathon runner. You were running in the LA half marathon recently, or was it the full marathon?
I did the Long Beach full marathon and the LA half marathon.
So in comparative terms, where would you pitch your current experience with respect to this marathon, this broadcast-a-thon, with the physicality of the other things?
The physical drain is similar, but the water station is changed up for a something more alcoholic here.
But
now it is 6:27, so we're switching to coffee.
Yeah.
It's all breakfast.
There we are, you see. You know, we actually started with Phil and us actually having a very hearty breakfast when we kind of almost after we kicked off, you know, shortly after that whole routine, sort of worked into that basis. I feel as though we're coming full circle here, full circle to find the truth. As ever, Dean, an absolutely superb link, you know, on top form there. We let you get back to the team and do various other bits and pieces. Now, can we actually see Dean on the camera? Or is he there?
Oh,
or is he hiding away?
It's a little bit of a delay, isn't there?
A little bit of delay. Is he waving?
I'm just having a moment. No, I can't see him.
Can't see him.
Have you got green trousers on?
Dean, are you wearing green trousers?
Oh, I did have green trousers.
Ah.
Yeah. Sort of on the sofa, I've got you here.
Green trousers on the sofa.
Oh, hang on. It's crashed.
It's crashed.
At my end. Oh, no, it's back. It's back. Yeah, oh, but you've gone. Oh, no, there's a head. Oh, good grief. There's a head kind of upside down on the camera.
An upside down head on the camera. My word.
It's like the photo we had of the... It was driving upside down.
That was Alana.
What is it with
American and Canadian people wanting to drive upside down? You know, do they not realise there's the right way up? For goodness sakes.
Yeah, we don't realise that. Right? I just knocked the camera over.
Don't worry. You knocked the camera over. It's back on board now. Whew, release. We thought, where is Alex? Okay, Natalie, throw them those two questions, which I know Dean is ready to just bat back into the stratosphere.
Yes.
Dean, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us?
I enjoyed it reasonably well.
Mm.
And so can we look forward to connecting with you in the near future?
Look forward to it.
A I think from the first moment that John Barry introduced the 007 theme in From Russia With Love, it's always had a significance, as well as obviously being featured in Thunderball and Diamonds Are Forever, and a certain action adventure that somehow just lifts the Sean Connery-era Bonds into a whole new theme. Anyway, that's my little analysis of the Bond 007 theme as we head off into the background and we greet the fantastic Stuart Carr. How are you, Stuart?
I'm fine. How are you?
Wonderful, and wonderful to connect with your good self today because, as many people would say, it's Christmas time again. Stuart Carr's on air. Fantastic. You know, it's like the two things going together, like the equivalent of the Queen's speech and, you know, rose nuts, chestnuts and all the rest of the bits and pieces. Ed, bring this together with respect to X Factor, stars and banners and all sorts of other goodies that we are going to share.
Hello, Stuart.
Hi, Ed. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Welcome to Lincoln's first community radio station, Siren 107.3 FM. You've been keeping well, have you, sir?
I have, absolutely, yeah. And thanks for having me on today.
Not at all. As Alex just said, it is Christmas time again. And we spoke about a year ago when you'd written the song for yourself. It's got a new twist on it this year. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a BBC guy last year that said to me, why don't you come up with an original song? And I did, and... as you said, I did it for myself. But this year, I wanted to get someone who was a bit more famous than I was, quite a bit, and actually did it with Johnny from X Factor from last year. Because it was a swing song, it is a swing song, and I heard him do it on X Factor. Swing, that was, not my song.
Yeah.
And I thought he'd be perfect for the song, so going pretty well at the moment, thank you.
It's not your first link with X Factor, though, is it?
No, because I'm actually a writer-producer from a big studio in London called Rollover Studios. It's all Peter Andre stuff, and got Nick Saturday singer, actually, so it's going quite pretty well. But I got linked up with Ridian from X Factor a few years ago, and that's what he eventually didn't do a ballad I wrote. So I thought, well, we don't want to waste it, so I did it myself. So this is why I've gone into a bit of artist, being the artist myself.
And then you had Silence Says It All along the way, didn't you?
Yes, that was the one we actually wrote specially for Ridian. That was a few years back, I think 2008 or whenever he was on it. A year afterwards we did that one. And from there onwards, you know, I knew the management company there and thought, well, Johnny Robinson could be actually great on my swing song.
Excellent. And It's Christmas Time Again was on iTunes last year, wasn't it, as well?
Yes, it was on iTunes last year, but that was by myself doing it, which was a bit different from this. But it's the same song, same lyrics, same everything. And he did it on ITV, by the way, 2 days ago.
It's on this morning, wasn't he? Yeah.
He was on this morning. He did a fantastic thing because he really was proudly because he actually went on and sang it totally live. It takes a lot of guts to do that, and you know, no backing vocals, nothing. Absolutely right. So he did brilliantly.
If only Natalie Tuck wasn't such a Strictly Come Dancing fan. You know, all of these X Factor references.
I don't know any of these names.
I tell you what, shall we actually play the tune?
Yeah.
I think we should, yeah.
Yeah.
Are you in favour of that, Stuart? Would you like to play It's Christmas Time Again?
Absolutely. Thank you very much for playing it.
Here it comes. Stay online. Don't leave us. We'll be back with you shortly.
Thanks.
Sounds like the sort of tune Tom Davis, if you found him under your Christmas tree, doing that jazz scenario that we were talking about earlier. It's a feature on that show. Of course, you have the details behind that, don't you, Ed?
Certainly do. It's Christmas Time Again, written by Stuart Carr, performed by Johnny Robinson.
Johnny Robinson! Performing Stuart Carr! Genius!
It was quite funny, story, because he said to me before he went on this morning, he said, I'm a little bit nervous. I said, how can you be nervous? You did the X Factor last year, you came about sick. In front of 20,000 people and 20 million were watching. So I said, you know, it's like a piece of cake for you, really, isn't it?
Exactly. A lot more watching that than we're watching this year, but never mind, that's another show entirely.
Yeah, that might be another story.
Still, it was a lad from Saltburn who won. Well done, sir. James
there
Arthur.
We go. No, he did well.
He did, yes. Whether his career will ever survive that, I really don't know. We are a range of things there. Stuart, it's been absolutely splendid, but Natalie, any other questions you want to put now you've actually heard some of the magical creations of Stuart Carr?
Are you currently writing any more songs then, Stuart?
Yeah, we're always, I'm always in the studio writing songs, different projects and things, and probably doing some more with Johnny, hopefully. And, you know, we're always asked to write for other people. They don't always come to fruition, but we do get asked. So we are doing quite a bit, yeah, in the new year.
If they don't always come to fruition, do you ever feel a bit like, oh, you spent so much time writing a song and then they never get, you know, to be heard? What does that feel like?
It's incredibly frustrating. If I told you how many songs we actually write, go in and produce, and then throw away three quarters of the way through, it's just, you think you've got something and it sometimes doesn't work. The Christmas song you just heard took me about 15 minutes to write.
Wow.
Sometimes it comes really quickly and naturally. You know, this BBC guy said, you've got to come up with something original, and they just came to me. But other times, we were doing something for Japan recently, and we worked about 3 weeks. I had the verse, some lyrics, but you know, I do the music. Well, so I just couldn't get a chorus to it, and we had to ditch it after about 3 weeks. So it's so hard that it's beautiful when it comes really naturally, like that one did.
Yeah, Stuart, in many ways, is going to be channeling the old tensions and excitements of Tin Pan Alley, Denmark Street, and so on. You're probably too young to remember that whole setup.
Well, basically, I know I'm old, but I'm not quite that.
Exactly. But you know that kind of notion where, you know, as songsmiths, you're actually sort of churning out material, you're getting material together, and you're looking to actually capture that elusive hit record and so on.
I do remember those days. I was only young.
Of course.
I worked with the producers. They had Mud, Sweet, and Bay City Rollers.
Thanks. Well, there we are.
And I used to follow them around. And
we sang Shang-a-Lang, and we sang with the band, I won't go any further.
They carried them out at their concert once.
They certainly needed to be, exactly. Yeah.
They carried me out. I just wanted to get out. No.
Were you wearing the tartan scarf? This could be another critical scenario.
No, they were good in their day, they really were.
Well.
But it is going back to those days. We still make songs up now. I've got my recorder with me wherever I go, and I just, you know, if someone wants a tune and I'm in the right mood, we just make it up. But I then have to go home and work out the chords. And on Christmas time, again, being swing, my pianist, who's a top pianist, he tours for Texas Choir and lots of people, we had a bit of difficulty with a couple of chords because it wasn't sounding like I wanted, but we got it right, hopefully, in the end.
I should hope so. You know, I felt it went perfectly well, and rightly so, too. Ed, last two questions for Stuart, please.
Stuart, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on Siren FM this afternoon?
I think more than reasonable. It's been really great.
And can we connect with you again in the future?
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. Could I say just hi? This is going to LA, I take it?
Yes.
I want to say hi to our friends out there.
Of course.
Gary, Victoria Davis, and we miss you all, love you all, and everything's going to be cool, Jason, and everything. So,
and if for whatever reason...
We want to go out there and see you again. Have friends out there, and they're wonderful.
If for whatever reason they haven't heard it live, don't worry. They can always listen again via the podcast, which will be going out probably sometime in 2013. Because that's the kind of kind people we actually are. Flaming lips.
Oh, it's been brilliant. I think it's a fantastic thing you're doing.
Thank you very much. I feel a warm feeling coming all over me, and it's not indigestion.
Cheers, Stuart.
Take care. Thanks for having me on.